Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mind in After the Game. Wow. I'm joined today by Elizabeth Olson. Before we get started, I'm going to play some ads and then we will get right into it. Let me just get right on to those ads. So here we go.
Lucy Nicotine is a company founded by Caltech scientists and former smokers looking for a better and cleaner nicotine alternative. Finally, tobacco alternatives that don't suck.
Researched and developed for 3 years to be made for people, not patients. Lucy has created a nicotine gum with 4 milligrams of nicotine that comes in 3 flavors, wintergreen, cinnamon, and pomegranate. Lucy also has a lozenge with 4 milligrams of nicotine in cherry ice flavor. Each and every flavor actually tastes great and it's convenient and discreet. Products can be enjoyed anywhere on flights, at work, on the go, or even in the gym.
I am so happy that Lucy is sponsoring us. Ever since they came on board, I have gotten no less than 5 of my friends transitioned over to Lucy and put their cigarettes down. They like the gum. I'm used to seeing the packages all around. This stuff is great, and it's really helping people make much healthier choices. So get on board and join the Lucy movement.
Hey, it's 2021. Get rid of your cigarettes, unplug your vape, throw out your dip, and get some Lucy nicotine gum or lozenges. This is the real deal. A subscription to Lucy comes directly to your door each month. It's so simple that you don't even have to leave your house because Lucy has delivery down.
Reality NSFW listeners, go to lucy.co and use promo code SURVIVOR to get 20% off all products, including gum or lozenges. That's lucy.co and use promo code SURVIVOR at checkout. Also, I have to give this disclaimer. Warning, this product contains nicotine derived from tobacco. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. That's lucy.co and be sure to use that promo code SURVIVOR.
This episode of Reality NSFW is sponsored by Blue Chew. Say it with us, Blue Chew. Blue Chew is making waves and bringing more confidence to the bedroom by offering chewable tablets that can help men get stronger and longer lasting erections. That's right, we're giving away super hard dicks.
Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. Blue Chew's tablets help men achieve harder, stronger erections to combat all forms of ED.
Blue Chew is an online prescription service, so no visits to the doctor offices, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. And it ships right to your door in a discreet package. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. And the best part, it's all done online.
BlueChew's licensed medical providers work with you to find the right ingredient and strength for your prescription. Don't like swallowing pills? No problem here. BlueChew's Sildenafil and Tadalafil tablets are chewable. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA and they prepare and ship direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy.
Hey, if you're looking to give that immunity idol to someone or you don't want to be voted out of a crater, don't worry. Blue Chew's got you covered. So if you could benefit from extra confidence when it's time to perform, visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information.
And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use promo code SURVIVOR at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's Blue Chew, BlueChew.com, promo code SURVIVOR to receive your first month free. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast.
We're all trying to eat better, but healthy breakfast doesn't have to be boring. Magic Spoon has the amazing flavors you love, but without all the bad stuff. And it's amazing as a midnight snack right before bed.
0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. That's only 140 calories per serving.
It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, and low-carb. And build your own box. Available flavors to build your very own custom bundle are cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, blueberry, cinnamon, cookies and cream, and my favorite, maple waffle. Now, Magic Spoon recently brought back their two super popular flavors, cookies and cream and maple waffle. Thank goodness. But they're back permanently. And when these flavors were first introduced for a limited time, they sold out extremely quickly. Now, I'm here to let you know you can get them again or try them for the first time. Why? Because they're delicious and indulgent.
Johnny, Magic Spoon has so many great flavors that I really enjoy, and even my kids enjoy them. We have the cocoa, fruity frosted, peanut butter. All these are really great combinations. They enjoy waking up in the morning and getting some Magic Spoon right off to start their day great before they head off to school. I think everybody listening should give Magic Spoon a try, or if you've tried them already, it's time to reorder. Let's get you some more Magic Spoon and get your day started right.
Hey, when I finish a podcast late at night, the first thing I'm thinking is not sleep. It's let me grab a delicious bowl of Magic Spoon before I go to bed.
So go to magicspoon.com/survivor to grab a custom bundle of cereal and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code survivor at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/survivor and use the code SURVIVOR to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this podcast.
All right. Well, hello, Elizabeth. It was so good.
Hey, Sarah, how's it going?
Pretty good. I remember that we talked about a month ago. It seems that now that I'm here, thought we'd do it over and see if we could get a good connection for this one and make it happen.
I hope this works good.
Me too. So thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. And so we'll just dive right on in. So remember, back on David versus Goliath, you get that call, you're on the show. So what was that process like for you?
Yeah, I had actually been contacted for Ghost Island, and they were interested in getting me on for Ghost Island. But I, at the time, I was actually pregnant with my third child. And so one of the agents was like, well, you got to call me if you're still interested after you have that baby. And she was like, make sure you have my number. You have my number? You've got my email? And so I was like, bro, I've got your number. I've got your email. I'm not going to forget. And I'm, yeah. So, my son was 2 weeks old when I called her back up and, got the ball rolling, because it takes a little while for that to happen. And, it was a good experience. It was actually one of the more thrilling parts of the whole, I guess, shebang. Because you're just like, you dream of that. You dream of getting that call back. You dream of like getting to send your clothes in for the game, and they get to select that and all those things. But it was interesting because like they're playing mind games with you like from the very beginning, from like every single like conversation you have with your agent on the phone, or even like in casting in Los Angeles and stuff like that. It is interesting because it's almost like they're just trying to see if you're serious about it, because they'll be like, you've got to get this heart testing done in the next 48 hours. And normally it takes like weeks to get that like schedule and stuff like that. But it was like, dude, I'm going to pull every string I can. I'm going to knock on every door and beat the door down and get it done. So it was just one thing after the next that was similar to that. So it was kind of like, after a while, you're like, oh, they're fucking with us. I get it.
You're like, okay, so when do I actually start playing the game, you know?
Right.
So do you have any sort of any moment that happened during the casting process or before that really sticks out to you?
Yeah, it was honestly getting to pack that bag, the box that had all of my game clothes that I got to send into them, my cowboy hat and my boots, my belt buckle. And they gave you like the code for the business for Survivor, whatever that mm-hmm. FedEx has. And it was just like, dude, this is happening. And it was so cool. Like it was seeing that box was like, the next time I'm going to see this is going to be Fiji, bro.
Right? And it has to be wild to think. I didn't even know that you actually had to send in a box of your clothes. And that's what they choose from then.
Yeah. You can thank PG for that, or at least partly, because they're looking through your clothes to make sure you don't have like any kind of advantage, like matches or PG on her jewelry. She had like it made where you could go fishing with her necklace or something. So like literally every single thing has to be approved. Like you're not allowed to wear a ponytail holder that hasn't been through their inspection phase. And like, I don't know what all they're doing, but like they're figuring out, I guess, putting all the different things together for whatever purposes. But anyway, yeah, you have to send it to LA.
Oh, wow. Well, I guess people get really creative, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
So you had all that happen. You go through casting, you get chosen, you get to wait a while before you actually go to Fiji, right? And then you get to Fiji. So tell me a little bit about landing in Fiji, starting the game, and what that was like for you.
Yeah, I would say pregame even started in Los Angeles again, because they keep you there for like two nights or something. And so you're locked in your room by yourself 100%. And you're just got all this emotion already like going through you and so much excitement. And then they bring their like producers, assistants or whatever. I called them nannies. They bring you down the elevator like one at a time or whatever. And so then like we're meeting in one of the lobbies in this giant hotel, and you're looking around, you're like, oh my gosh, these are the people that I'm gonna play Survivor with. And
right,
so like even then you're like trying to size each other up and like you kind of I don't know I was just so happy I couldn't help but like smiling all the time. And it's part of my personality anyways, but
yeah,
it was really cool. And then landing in Fiji, it was kind of the same, because it took days, like I probably 5 or 6 days before we actually started the game. And again, you're not allowed to talk to anybody, and you're not even allowed to like help somebody get their food off the table. You know, like we're kind of at this resort together, but like they'll yell at you and they'll be like, EO, put that plate down. And it's like, oh, I was just trying to be nice, not like trying to like whatever. Okay, I'll check my Southern hospitality at the door. I got you.
Wow, that's wild. I can imagine that if you're somebody who really likes to talk, that whole time is so difficult.
Yeah, and I'm sure you know there's a reason that they have all of us casted, is because we all pretty much like to talk. So it was hard for all of us. But I will, one thing that was really interesting was like, you could tell that Angelina was high maintenance. I mean, like every little thing, I was just like, bro, like I was like, she's not going to last long. And, sure enough she did, but, it was just kind of interesting. I don't even know. I should talk to her. Was that a tactic? But anyway,
I mean, I think we all know the iconic, can I have your jacket scene for sure. Yeah. But I think throughout the season we do see, I know I have big fans. A lot of friends actually are very big fans of the season. So I thought that was really cool. So people are really excited to hear what you have to say here. So I know that last time we talked, we discussed a little bit about being on the island and the relationships that you made while you were on the island, as well as how you felt going into Merge and just the living situation.
Yeah. I mean, like Survivor is so fast paced. And so there's a lot of stress to immediately make connections. And so it was, you hit that beach and you're like, oh shit, this thing's real. And there's all these camera guys around you and you're like overwhelmed by all that. There's probably at least 40 crew on the island at our beach when we landed there, and probably 100. when we hit the barge before that. And so that was just overwhelming, and let alone the fact that you're trying to make as many connections as possible. But yeah, I was so fortunate because I immediately made several connections right off the bat. Like, Nick and I, they didn't show it too much, but we had a pretty, we had a lot in common because I grew up in Kentucky and obviously he's from Kentucky. And the little jerk lied to us and said, you know, that he didn't tell us he was a lawyer or whatever. He told us he was like a clerk, lawyer's clerk. But yeah, we bonded, but I was scared. I was like, I didn't want people to see us as close because we had the Southern accent. We came from Kentucky. We had, we were both poor growing up. And so I told Nick, I was like, look, man, I got your back, but don't talk to me, because if people see us hanging out or talking, like, I'm going out. Like, I know I'm the girl, and they're always the ones that get voted out in a twosome or whatever, you know? And so I also really bonded with Christian. I guess probably everybody did, you know, because Christian's amazing. But he ended up actually really trying hard later in the game at the, like, at the merge to try to save my ass. And so it was legit connection. And so, like, from day one, he and I just hit it off. And but the thing that was most surprising, I think, for me, as well as for, I'm sure, the producers, was that Lyrsa and I hit it off.
Yeah. And
I think that it was just such, like, that was the thing that I was like, dude, I can 100% trust Lyrsa. And from day one, I just had this trust and connection with her that I wasn't sure that I would be able to develop in the entire game. And so that was just a huge weight off my chest. I was like, okay, I've got several really good allies right out the gate. And so it was like breathing room, you know, like, okay. Mm-hmm. I can't actually play this game. I've made some solid connections. And so that was like a huge stress, like, weight lifted off of me.
Yeah, I can only imagine how stressful it can be just to make connections so quickly, because usually you have a lot of time in life or no real end date of when you have to make the connection. So, and they happen really fast on the island is what I hear.
Yeah, and I think part of it, I'm sure, is like just the fact that a genuine survivor situation, like you're trying to work together to stay alive in the woods and, you know, in a jungle on a beach or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you're fighting against the elements. Like, we fought through so many storms together, so much horrible rain, the wind, like the lightning, the waves. Like, and so I think all survivors can tend to bond over the elements or whatever, but also, but when you have that real connection with someone that is just like, I don't even know, man, like, you just know. But in real life, it doesn't happen that quick. There's just no way, not in one day, like, you make best friends. Hell no. So anyway.
Yeah. So tell me more about those living conditions. I know there was a lot of storms and it had have been really difficult to be out there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a pretty brave person. I've spent many nights out in the woods, and I didn't think that the elements would really get to me too bad. But I remember thinking, I think it was night 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking, I could actually die out here. Like, it was so bad. I was like, I did not come out on Survivor to die. Lightning was every 2 seconds. The wind was blowing coconut trees that had been growing towards the ocean. It was blowing backwards towards us. And we were getting pelted with the sand from the beach. And we were probably 40 yards from the ocean at least. And we were still getting pelted by that. Like, it felt like we were in a sandblast machine.
Wow.
Oh, and this is me too. This is funny. Night number one. Okay. Like, we're trying to go to sleep. All of our nerves are racked, you know. And there's these damn birds, man. Like, I swear, it sounded like a woman was being raped. Like, it was like screaming. They were screaming. Oh. And every time that the wind would get worse or the storm was about to get worse, they would all start screaming, hundreds of them. And we were like, what is this? You know, like, this is like, are we in a horror movie? But I pitch black, landed on my chest. And again, like, we had never seen these things. We had just, like, heard them. And it literally lands on my chest. And I scream like a little girl. And I throw it. And it ended up landing on Nick. And he starts screaming like a little girl. And everybody else is like, what the hell's going on? And it was like, we didn't even know what it was. But come find out, it was one of them damn birds.
Wow, that's terrifying. Especially in pitch black. You can't see anything. So something just lands on you. That's scary.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Big.
So,
it was big, too.
Yeah, so did they? So they must have been screaming a lot, and so the weather was terrible. How is this your sleep?
Yeah, I mean, I think every survivor has their own like experience of what was the most difficult for them, whether that was paranoia or missing their family, or the lack of food or the lack of sleep or the lack of having someone to like bounce ideas off of, or, you know, whatever it is, like there's something that everybody struggles with maybe more than the next person. And for sure, my biggest, I guess like struggle on the island was 100% the sleep situation. And so that was kind of unexpected, you know. I figured it would be really hard not having eaten, and but I could feel as the days went on, I could feel my brain dissipating. Like, it was like, oh my gosh, like I was literally sleeping less than an hour and a half every night. And wow. Like it was horrible. There were some nights I got zero sleep, and I'd look over and like Davey was snoring, and I was like, I want to punch him in the fucking face, bro. Like, how the hell is Wright can sleep and I can't? It was just like, oh man, it was frustrating. As time went on, like, I was getting nervous because I was like, I need more sleep than I'm getting. I want to play the long game. And I know that to plead your case at the very end at Final Tribal, you have to have the wherewithal to be able to communicate. And and even just to think about how to get there, like how to formulate plans and things like that. It was like brain was getting all fogged up. And so obviously everybody knows that I had the meltdown with the bed and Carl and even David or whatever. I finally was like, enough's enough. We're fixing the bed today. And but even the producers were like, why are you doing this? And I was like, it's strategic. At the moment, my brain was saying it's strategic.
So how was it strategic for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. But it was basically, it was like a math equation. Like, if every night I lose more of my brain, there's only going to be so much left. And so I knew I needed to start increasing my brain power, not decreasing it. I looked at it, I needed to increase my chances of getting a good night's sleep by fixing the bed. And because there was so many knots and so many curves, it was just like pretty bad.
I mean, I can only imagine. And it's actually funny. I learned this fact about sleep versus food. You can last a really long time without food, but you can really only last like 10 days without any sleep before you really start to get severe consequences. So it's interesting to think about how important sleep is. And I think a lot of people on the outside watching Survivor don't think about these things at all.
Yeah, hands down. You wouldn't think about that sitting on your couch at home. Like, oh my gosh, it's not just that they're starving, but it's that they're facing the elements that maybe a little less thought of as far as like sleeping or whatever.
Of course. So it has to be so hard. And then the hardest part is you got voted out, and then you had to then live your life after this game. So I want you to tell me a little bit about that. Can you maybe start from when you got voted out?
Yeah. Very emotional, clearly. Like, going in tribal, Angelina had already told me that it was going to be me. So in some ways that made it really nice, because I knew that I knew, dude, it was 100% that I'm going home. And so I obviously went into my last tribal being like, okay, like, we got to get Angelina out. Like, that's the only chance I have to, like, show everybody that she betrayed them and their trust by coming to me. Mm-hmm. And, but I think it was very hurtful in the fact that, like, all my Davids voted for me. Like, I received the most votes of anybody in one single tribal council ever. And it was completely unnecessary from my perspective. It's like, dude, they had the numbers. Why would you have to, like, add salt to the injury? But I didn't realize that Carl was the one that was, like, leading that charge. Plus, I mean, it actually makes sense thinking about it now. It's like, why would the Davids, like, they should blur the lines, like, as long as they possibly can. Because when you vote with someone, that you're able to still continue to work with them. But at the moment, it was hard, because I was like, man, I was the one fighting. I fought so hard to get a Goliath voted out. And I was and Christian was too. Christian was in with me. And so it was just like, man, you motherfuckers, like, you just blew up your own game. Like, I was trying. Like, I was legitimately, like, trying to save everybody from the Davids. And so it was kind of weird, like, watching everybody's fall, you know, being like, I could have helped you. But so that was like immediate emotional drain, was like feeling betrayed, you know, not bitter about it, but like, you know, like,
yeah,
they're hurting themselves. So that was that. And then I think one of the moments that hit me the hardest right away was getting on to the really nice boat where they were transferring me from Tribal Council Island to Ponderosa. And the psychiatrist is there, and there's a producer for the Ponderosa producer. And I think the psychiatrist handed me the menu or whatever. And she was like, order whatever you want. And I was like, I got really mad. I was like, I'm not coming out. I threw the menu down, and I was like, I think I even said, I was like, fuck you. Because I was so mad. I was like, I didn't come out here to freaking eat. I didn't come out here to freaking be at a resort, you know? And and then seeing that menu also was a reminder of the fact that my kids and husband were back home, maybe even looking at a menu. Hey, what are you going to have to eat? And so it was just like, it was honestly just like a slap in my face about the fact that, yeah, I'm voted out, but also a slap in the face that I'm not with my family.
Yeah, I can't imagine how hard that had to have been in that moment. There's just so much emotion at that time.
Yeah, for sure.
So you go through Ponderosa, and then you eventually, you go home. And you have to now live life back home and with everybody around you. And then the show airs again. So tell me what it's like for you, what your experience was coming home to your family and to your home.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was such a high. Like, it was such an incredible experience. Yeah, I got voted out. Yeah, it was really freaking hard. We went through two cyclones and stuff like that, but it was just like, it was like your dream come true, you know. It was getting back on that airplane, coming back home with the cast, and being like, wow, I think we were part of one of the greatest seasons of Survivor. And it was just like this incredible feeling. We all love each other, which was also, I wasn't expecting that. Like, Ponderosa was pretty much drama free, and the party after final tribal was pretty much like a party too. And
that's awesome.
So it was just like, literally, it felt like a happy family getting on that plane. And like, so that it was like the elation, the excitement, even though most of us lost, somebody won it, but we all knew we won because like we were on a great season of Survivor. So that was a pretty high, probably one of the highest highs of my entire life, you know. And getting to participate in that But, you know, like getting back used to real life was a transition, and things that I wasn't exactly expecting to be hard were hard. And there were some weird things too. It was one of my biggest regrets was the fact that my siblings, and there are seven of them, they all signed waivers. Wow. And so I could talk to them about what happened on the island. And they were my Survivor watching buddies, you know, like we would binge watch Survivor together. And my husband, on the other hand, he doesn't like Survivor. He gets annoyed by it. He just doesn't get it. And which is totally fine. But I really regret not decompressing with my siblings, because I could have legally, like I could have. And to process like the loss and like the strategy of like, oh my gosh, she said this, and oh my gosh, this happened, and I couldn't sleep because of this fucking bamboo, you know? And but anyway, so I regret that because I didn't have that chance to really process fresh before seeing it on TV with somebody that's familiar with the strategy and what Survivor is. And so the only person that I really talked with was my castmates, but also my husband. And my husband wasn't, I don't think he was trying to not be supportive, but he wasn't supportive of like the trauma of everything that happened. And so anyway, that was difficult. Something I do regret. Also the, one of the funny things was, I had to have a coconut in my house, which is like the stupidest thing, but, it was because on the island, like we were starving and most days we didn't have anything to eat, but there was always a coconut, but you could like have something in your mouth that you're chewing on, you know, even though it didn't taste good. It was like this knowing of like, okay, there's at least some calories right there available. And so mentally, it was weird. I was like, my cupboards were full of food, but like I just needed to have a coconut because I just needed to know that I wasn't going to starve. So that was a funny thing.
Did you ever eat the coconut?
No, of course not.
just there for comfort. But the comfort coconut.
Yeah. Yes. So, but even now, like one thing that's funny is like when it storms, I kind of like go out and I was like, is that all you got? You know, like look at the storm clouds, look at the rain, look at the lightning, and like beat my chest. Like I've dealt with the worst you can bring, you know, like bring it on.
I love that. And I really would love to have that on video so that I could include that here.
All right. I'll have, I'll definitely have to see if my husband can hook us up.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I mean, there was so much after the game, like, you know, it was stressful, right. Especially before it starts airing because, you know that the producers, they're making a TV show and it's all about like whatever character they want you to be, you know, that they're going to show you. And so there's like so much, I guess like pressure of like, what are they going to show? And I gave them some pretty deep, like dramatic moments. And one of which was the bamboo, obviously that the fans got to see, but there was another meltdown. And so it was just like, oh my gosh, they could portray me as this like super person. I wasn't able to build connections and, you know, like whatever. And so I was stressed out. And then I also like, there's that fear of like not wanting to be seen in your underwear and bra in national TV, you know, like it was just like, I didn't worry about it on the island, you know, because it was just like, it was just the game. But like coming back was like, oh my gosh, like I'm not skinny and you know, my church is going to see this. My family's going to see this.
I teach
Sunday school, you know? And, so I was freaking out about that. And I was freaking out having to tell my husband when I first got back, I was like, bro, like I lasted about 2 days in my pants and then the pants were gone. And, he did not really like that, but, I mean, I guess I can't blame him. And then I knew too, like, I'm a Christian, but I have maybe different ways of interpreting scripture than maybe the traditional Christians or whatever. Like,
yeah,
I don't mind saying the F word, you know, like, and did I called Angelina a bitch. I probably called everybody a bitch. And I was worried about that. Cause I was like, again, not while I was on the island, because I just wanted to be me, you know? And, mm-hmm. But when I got back, I started freaking out, having anxiety, like, everybody's going to think I don't love Jesus anymore. And so finally, like, but the coolest thing happened because of that, because I was like, on the island, I experienced freedom to be myself more than I ever had in my entire life. I didn't have to pretend to be anybody or anything. Nobody knew my history. Nobody, whatever. Like, it's like a clean slate, which is so cool. Most people don't ever get that opportunity. Mm-hmm. But when I got back, I freaked out about it. I was like, I'm never going to be in the church. I'm never going to get to go to family reunions. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
I can imagine. I actually just had an interview with Leslie, and Leslie talked a lot about kind of the way she would be portrayed as a Christian on Survivor, as well as what would the people who are in her church think about her being on the show and like lying or deceit or the immunity idol even. And I mean, her season, it was China. So going to the temple and things like that. So it's interesting how I know I never would have really thought about that watching the show, but it's interesting to hear that story now. So seems like it's a common theme with some people on the show.
Yeah. And yeah, especially if you're like ultra religious, which I am very involved with like church and things like that, but I would not consider myself to be ultra religious because I kind of hate that word. But like most people would probably say that I'm maybe religious or whatever because of how involved that I am. And so I guess there's this like this pressure to be something, and whatever community it is that you represent, there's that pressure. And so, whether that's like you're representing the LGBTQ community or the Black community or women or whatever, mm-hmm. like one of the tribes, I guess, that I represent is Christians. And so that's something that, I guess could have affected the way that I played the game. And I think for many people it does. Like I think of Yule, you know, like he played the game differently, being a minority, being an Asian. I didn't let that affect me during the game, but boy, afterwards, I was freaking stressed. I literally thought that I might be excommunicated. Like, that was a legitimate thought.
Oh, no. That's terrifying.
It is, but I honestly finally got to the point where I was, like, literally, like, fuck those bitches if they leave me because I'm me, and that's not real love. And so it was very liberating. And so for that, I'm thankful. Like there's so many things I'm thankful for that happened mentally through Survivor. And for one was just realizing when I got voted out, like I actually turned around and I was going to tell everybody, y'all go to hell. I'm going to Texas, which is a quote from Davey. And, most people wouldn't know that, but I knew it. And so when I turned around, though, these little bastards that voted me out, I was just like, damn, I love you guys, you know? And I think I even said that. But that in that moment, it was liberating because I realized that who I am, that I just love people at the very bottom of who I am. Like, that's going to be Survivor strips you. And what is going to be at the bottom? It could be ugly. It could be pretty. But like for me, it reveals my heart. In fact, I just love people. And at the very core of that, that's just who I am. And so that was just a huge gift mentally. And then also like just the pressure to perform for an audience as far as like your tribe, just letting that go. It's just a weight that's not worth carrying, you know?
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it is just beautiful to see people just being with who they are and kind of saying, fuck everyone else and what they think. And this is me. And if you like it, cool. If you don't, fuck off.
Right, exactly. And so, because that's what real love is. Real love is not loving a fake person or an idea of who someone is. It's just like loving someone that's authentic to who they are themselves. So, yeah.
Yes. Well, cool. So I know I feel like this is such a good topic, and I love this topic of people and, you know, that idea of what you see on the screen versus who a person is, because it really is true. As you said a little bit before, the producers are making a show. They want to portray you in a specific way, and that's the goal of the show. So the fans only see this small portion of that, and they make such harsh judgments based on that small piece of what they see. So it's interesting to hear from you and other people about what that experience is like.
I feel like I got a very generous edit. Jeff Probst loved me, and I'm so glad that he loved me, because it could have been so different. Because I know a lot of people didn't get that same, generous edit, or accurate even. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some people just do not get a good edit. And it's really unfortunate, because I've met a couple people, I've talked to a couple people, and they don't always match their edit. And I think it's just kind of unfortunate that that fans at least don't take into account that there's more to a person than what they see on TV.
For sure. So
is there anything else? I know you said there was a couple of weird things about when you would come home. I know you mentioned the going outside and beating your chest with the storm and then the coconut. Was there anything that you would consider that was weird for you coming home?
People it's hard to like not interpret people's faces when you go out in public. You're like, wow, are they trying to vote me out? Like, what's their angle? Like, are they looking at me weird? Things like that. So your coworkers, especially, because you know them, and you're like, oh, are you having a bad day, or is it me? Are you talking about me behind your back? You know, stuff like that. It's like you can't help but have those thoughts. And then also, like, I was obsessed with thinking about Survivor, not in like a regret, like oh my gosh, playing certain things over in my head, like, oh wow, I wish I hadn't said that. But just like, I obviously I'm a huge fan, and so I just love Survivor, and I kept thinking about it and replaying the awesome things, replaying the shitty things, and also just calling my new family, my Survivor buddies, my Survivor family, that we, you know, just calling them all the time. And so that was something that I didn't realize, that I was gonna literally like gain a whole big family that had this huge bonding experience that only we can understand. And so we were very supportive with each other after the game, and so that was really, really quite an awesome experience. But it was kind of like sucking a big part of my life that I wasn't, I guess, like fully aware was gonna happen, and that affected like my relationship with my husband too, because he again, I clearly, if I wasn't expecting that to be obsessed in my head and in my thought and in my like time with Stuber, surely he wasn't thinking that either. And so it was hard for him. The transition afterwards was very, very hard for him, harder for him than me, because I had this experience he didn't have. He didn't understand. Like, I got set free from some bondage that I'd been having, and I had this new family, and he was like, well, what about your old family? And so like, he thought that Survivor, the passion I had in my blood, to like the love that I have for the game and my desire to be in the show, kind of gonna end when I got home. But it was honestly, it was the opposite. Like, I would dream about Survivor. I would literally dream at night. And it was just like waking up, thinking about it in the middle of the night, couldn't go back to sleep, calling my buddies, you know, like listening to podcasts or like watching other seasons. So it was, that was a big transition. And, I think that at some point I realized, I was like, my husband doesn't have to be, like, I guess, understanding of my survivor journey. Like, he doesn't mm-hmm. have to be this, like, have a certain response, because I think that that was placing on, like, hey, you need to be supportive of me. You need to let me be this way. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you need to let me experience the joy and the anxiety of, like, seeing myself on TV. Like, need to respond this way when I sunk that fucking, like, slingshot thing. Like, I want you to be jumping up and down with me. And he wasn't.
Yeah.
And yeah. It was just like, you know, finally I was just like, I was like, you know what? I can let go of that. I can let go of that, because I've got other people that are supportive and are understanding of this side of me, this huge part of mm-hmm. me. But so that was actually, has taken years to process all of that hurt. And I guess miscommunication, or for sure, expectations. And mm-hmm. So that it was, being on Survivor ended up actually being very costly to my marriage. And wow. So that was, it was kind of unfortunate, but it's just the reality of it. Like, people mm-hmm. would recognize me, my husband would get jealous, you know, and mm-hmm. He was jealous of my time. And so yeah, that was something that I never really thought about, that being a potential, you know. And so
and
even to this day, still haven't worked through all of that as a couple, you know? Like, we still go to therapy, and guess what, Survivor comes up somewhat frequent.
So, well, it's a big it's a pretty big deal, and it's a big change. And yeah. You touched on this a little bit about the trauma, and there is I was told once about how somebody, I think it was actually Lex, that was saying how the trauma, it's almost like when you go to war, you still have some of that PTSD or some sort of trauma when you come home, because it is a survival. It might be with cameras and people around, but it's still such a different experience than what you experience every day.
Yeah, for sure. And I think part of it is this, like, very unique experience that is extremely hard. It's so draining, and physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and nobody understands. Like, your family doesn't understand. You don't understand. You're a new person. Like, you can't just leave all that on the island. And let alone the fact that, like, unless you win, you lost. I mean, duh. But, like, mm-hmm. that's, you're not going to go on Survivor if you're expecting to lose. And so, like, you have this yeah. huge fucking dream your whole life, or however, like, this into, like, I know I can do this. I know I'm going to win. And then you have to live with the reality of that not coming through and being true, and figuring out, oh, well, I guess that's not my destiny. I guess that's not who I am. And so that's hard. That's hard to navigate that. That's traumatic. And mm-hmm. it may seem like I'm over dramatizing that, but I'm telling you, it's the truth. It's traumatic to have to deal with that loss and feeling alone. Nobody understands, yeah. except the casting.
So you broke up slightly. So you said that the only people who understand you are, like, the cast, right? Is that what you said? That you felt like understand?
Yeah, correct.
Cool. Yeah, it seems that way when you kind of have that common bond.
Yeah, because the world doesn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Shared experience.
Exactly. And I think that's what makes it so powerful in general. And, you know, brings you to this experience, but it sounds like you wouldn't have had it any other way.
Yeah, for real. I do not regret going on Survivor, and I'm actually glad I didn't win, because I can be an arrogant son of a bitch. And so, like, in that regards, like, I feel like I didn't lose who I am, you know, like, when it got yeah. to my head, you know, had I actually won. And so, like, $1 million, bro, I don't need $1 million. I've been poor my whole life. Like, I'm pretty good at being poor. And, so, But yeah, I have no regrets. Like, I would do it 100 times over again. And I am so thankful for the opportunity and to be able to pursue that. And there was a lot of people that made it possible. Like my husband, mm-hmm. he watched my kids. My baby was just 3 months old when I left to do casting finals in Los Angeles. He was 5 months old when I left to go be gone for, you know,
wow,
2 months. So, I mean, my husband in a lot of ways was super supportive. But I think that I wish I had been able to have the foresight of like, hey, this is like, it's a bigger experience than just the 2 months of being gone, you know, and that would have helped smooth so many things over. So in the grand scheme, I have no regrets of doing it, but I think that I would have had a bigger conversation with my husband that would have probably helped plow the road, you know, like, okay, let's think about this, like, I guess, realistically.
I think that makes perfect sense, but it's hard to know going in because you don't know what the other side's going to look like. So, you know, yeah. You make it work with what you have now. So, Elizabeth, what are you doing now? What's life look like?
Life is awesome. I mean, it's crazy. We've got a huge farm out. Survivor, just the little bit of money that I did make was able to help me get a down payment on some acreage. And it's just some like 15 acres with a super small old house, but it made it possible. And so we've got tons of little critters running around the place. We had 10 piglets born on New Year's Day. And we had two baby goats during the week of Christmas. And lots of baby rabbits and cows and horses and stuff. So that my dream was little was down. But another huge thing that's been going on for the last year is I've been able to help start like a nonprofit for growing food and teaching the next generation about how to be reconnected with the earth and how to grow food, because like we're losing that knowledge and that skill, and we never know like when we're gonna need to know how to grow food. And so like being stranded on an island and having to depend on the earth as the grocery store, not just going down to Walmart, was like a reminder to me how much that like we're dependent on the earth. And so it was just like kind of like stirring in my heart passions that had been there for a long time, and I love teaching. And so it's just kind of combined all of those things into one by doing this huge garden where we're growing food and getting in nature, getting kids' hands dirty, but also like connecting the older generation, you know, these 70-80-year-old guys that have been growing food. They don't have opportunity, unfortunately, where they're actually connecting with the younger kids, teaching them the things that they know. And so that's been really magical, being a part of that, like building relationships and bridging the generations, but also just sharing critical knowledge with people that don't know. So that's been awesome, like a dream that I've had for a long time kind of come into fruition.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, congratulations on that. That sounds great.
Thank you. And I can't, I should say that my kids are now 9, 7, and 4. And being their moms keeps me on my toes all the time. Like my 4-year-old boy is 100% crazy. I joke with Davey Hickenbacker. I'm like, bro, like he's like kind of crazy. Like me and Davey, like if we'd had a baby together, it would be my boy that I have. And so, even though obviously that would never happen, but he's my island baby with Davey, bro. Like just the adventure, crazy, like can always gets into trouble. You know, remember Hazel say, "Where's Davey?" Well, I'm always saying that about Shane. Where's Shane? Shane, where are you? So anyway, yeah, my kids are such a joy. And me and my husband are actually doing great. Like, we love each other. So,
good.
Hi, Kirk. I love you.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, Elizabeth, it was awesome to have you here. And second time's a charm, right? So thank you so much for agreeing to do this with me and all the things that you've had to say today.
Yeah, my absolute pleasure. I think it's awesome that you're doing this to kind of like awareness to the fans of something that maybe is important to talk about. And definitely important to understand that the cost that people go through to play the game Survivor, like it's costly.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That means a lot. So thank you so much. And we'll catch you next week. Mind after the game. Have a great day, Elizabeth.
All right. Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks. Bye.
You too.
And for more reality NSFW content, visit adfreensfw.com.